This is XTP Media.
Welcome to the latest episode of Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Hello, I'm Peter Johnson, and today on Extended, we're exploring the Cold War, a time of extraordinary engineering, secrecy, and operating at the limits of what was possible. Today, my guest is Lindsay Rumbold, author of Banshee, which is a gripping aviation thriller that brings together the Vulcan, electronic warfare, espionage, and a decades-old mystery buried beneath a former RAF station. Beyond the thriller, Banshee is really a story about trust between pilots and engineers, the RAF and the industry, and the people responsible for flying aircraft carrying unproven technology. With her aerospace background, Lindsay brings remarkable authenticity to the technical, operational, and human side of Cold War aviation. In this conversation, we'll explore the inspiration behind Banshee, the reality of Cold War aviation, the remarkable Avro Vulcan, and why the engineers behind the aircraft are just as important as the pilots in the cockpit. Lindsay, welcome to Extended.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show.
Wow. We first met at Yeovilton at an air day, and I'm going to say it was 10 years ago now. I can't quite remember the exact date, but that's where we saw XH-558, of course, and that was about to fly. But it sort of makes me think about the V-bombers and V-Force and Rod and that whole thing. What makes the V-bombers so intriguing to you?
It's a number of things. I think one is it's so soon after the end of the Second World War, and you have, you know, the jet age is in full swing, and the massive leap in technology. You know, it's often quoted that there's, you know, 11 years between the first flight of the Lancaster and the first flight of the Vulcan. Yet, you know, you compare them as aircraft systems, you know, the complexity, you know, the step change in complexity between, you know, the piston engines of World War II and aircraft like the Vulcan, the Victor, the Valiant is absolutely incredible. And the other thing that fascinates me is that there were three aircraft, the V-bombers, designed for the same specification, effectively, as long-range strategic bombers. Yeah, can you imagine that in defense these days? Three, you know, here's a single contract. We'll do three aircraft. There just wouldn't be the budget for it these days. So there's that aspect. But the fact that the three aircraft are also very different, you know, the Victor itself was pushing the boundaries in different ways to the Vulcan. So that, you know, that diversity of technical creativity is really what captured my imagination with it.
Now, you're definitely younger than me, but you're not that old that you saw them come into service. How did you first sort of pick up these V-bomber thematics that run through everything you do?
It was a number of things. My first job out of university was Land Rover at their Gaydon site. And this was actually before I got fully immersed in aviation. But it was quite clear that the site had passed as an Air Force base. So that was one spark of curiosity. Sort of, what happened here? What was going on? And that sort of sparked one aspect. And also living in Warwickshire, we were just down the road from Wellesbourne, where Vulcan XM655 lives. And we used to sort of pass it, sort of going past into Stratford on the back roads. So it was that, really. It's just actually seeing it. And it was just like, what are these? What happened here? What did they do? Where did they come from? And it snowballed.
Right.
And became an obsession, to be honest.
Yeah, so let's get on to Banshee. This is your first book.
It's my first published.
Your first published book. Oh, interesting. I might come back to that. And now Banshee is interesting because if I didn't know you, I probably wouldn't have picked that book up, because aviation fiction, and I have to make a disclosure here, is not something that's normally on my radar. I'm normally into historical tomes, technical tomes, and all things like that. So what was it about the Vulcan that made it the right aircraft for this story?
So part of it was when the ideas for Banshee started circulating in my head that 558 was still flying. And yeah, she's a very attention-grabbing aircraft. And I do miss seeing her fly. Yeah, she's quite a gap on the display circuit.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, understand and grasp the technical reasons why that she's had to be grounded and will not fly again. But I still miss her.
and we all do. We all do. It's one of those aircraft that when you see it so often, as we did at the time, we sort of took it for granted, and now it's gone. Yeah, not quite the same, is it?
No, it's not. But with the other V bombers, so when I was looking at setting this in sort of the early to mid 1960s, the Valiant was already starting to be phased out of active V bomber service. It was less technically advanced than the other two. So I mean, the interesting tangent about if the RAF had ever gone for the Valiant B2, because there was a B2 variant that Vickers did develop, but never went anywhere. So that ruled the Valiant out. And then the Victor, I did get to a point about halfway through the first draft where I was like, should I have picked the Victor? Because, you know, the Victor actually had a slightly higher payload. And he's like, oh, technically, would that have been better?
Yeah.
But then the other interesting thing is, if you take into account the whole political landscape of British defence at that era, because this was the time when a lot of the smaller firms like Avro, Hawker, what have you, were all conglomerating. So you ended up with like a British Aircraft Corporation and so on. But Hanley Page, who developed the Victor, very much, you know, we're not doing any of that. And as a result, the UK government was basically, well, we're not going to give you a contract for anything. So there was a definite policy by the British government of, if there are any development contracts, they wouldn't give them to Hanley Page out of principle. So that then made me think, well, actually, it would have been the Vulcan. Because there was no way that the government would have given money to Handley Page, which even extended later into the 60s, like with the Victor tankers. When the Victors were converted to tankers, the government gave the contract to Avro, who had never seen, you know, didn't have the expertise.
Yeah.
They were being expected to convert them. It's like, so, yeah, so that was one... the reasons why I stuck with the Vulcan.
Okay. So I came away after reading Banshee thinking, is this a flying story? Is this a spy story? Is it a bit of a mix of both? But in my day job, I talk an awful lot about trust. And one of the things that it really came to me is this is about asking crews to trust an aircraft that's in development. Was I right in thinking that?
I think it was a secondary theme as well, because it's also you're having to trust the people that are developing these systems. You're having to trust their engineering judgment, their knowledge, their diligence. You know, you're having to trust that you're not going to be unreasonably endangered. Because I think with test flying, there's always a degree of uncertainty and risk. So I think it was in the back of my mind, but particularly with my own day job in engineering and aviation and what have you. It's always that you're doing your best to eliminate or minimize any risk to anyone, So it was an interesting crossover, really.
Okay. So you mentioned being an engineer yourself, and a key character is Gordon, of course. Feels very real to me. Was that the character that you had in mind as a real key character in a book, or is that something that sort of again came through as the story built?
No, from the very earliest stage, Gordon was always going to be a key character, and his friendship with Fraser, who's a Vulcan pilot, that was always going to be a central sort of thread of the book. Because before I started writing Banshee, there were other, before I settled on the actual plot, there were lots of ideas that was sort of I was playing around with, and Gordon popped up as an engineer, and it was like, you're actually quite an interesting chap. And it's interesting because some characters can carry a book and others can't. But yeah. Gordon was much sort of from the start of the first ideas was like, yeah, you can do this.
How did then that whole development of the story, the plot line originate? Where did this come from? Has it been something that's been brewing for a while, or did you just feel that's a really good story? Or I'm trying to understand how that kicked into your thinking and the process you then went through to get to write the book.
There were lots of what seems to happen with my brain is I'm fascinated by the history of the period, so I'll be reading and watching things. And then it just kind of sits in my hindbrain and things will just pop out. And it's like, wouldn't it be interesting if? So with Banshee, there were two kind of threads. One of them was, there were lots of interesting research projects that were going on into weapons and weapon systems in the 1950s and 1960s. What if one went like this? And then the other one, which my husband is terribly patient about, I think he's got used to it over the years, is when I worked at Landrove, there were always rumours about sort of things under the site and bunkers, and there's an ammunition depot down the road at Kyneton. And there were rumours of, oh, there's a tunnel to down there, and there isn't. It's complete nonsense. But part of my brain went like, be a good place to hide a body.
Yeah.
as you do.
Yeah, as one does, and as one does. But what's really interesting again about the book is, and I've got a bit of a fascination with wider aspects of aviation than just aeroplanes. And so sometimes when I think about ground crew and things like that, a lot of people don't see it in the same light. But you make a great play around this. You know, the engineers, the fitters, the ground crew are all really front stage of the book as well. Again, is that because of your background? Was that a deliberate ploy?
I think it's definitely partly my background, and partly getting fed up with the Hollywood stereotype. It is a Hollywood stereotype that, you know, whenever you get any kind of action movie, it's always like, you know, the pilot or, you know, this person who doesn't actually know a technical thing about anything and yet they still somehow roll in, know everything and save the day. And it was just part of my brain was going, that's not how it would work. Anyone who has to deal with me on a daily basis, at home and at work, will tell you I'm all about the details. And I am the worst person to watch any kind of film with, because I will shred it. I will put up those bullets. And it's like the beginning of Quantum of Solace where the Aston Martin flips.
Yeah.
And then there was the documentary about how they had to set up this whole rig to force the Aston Martin to flip so that they could film it. And a large part of my brain was like, why didn't they just rewrite it? The story. It's where it comes from.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you. Welcome from the Royal Aeronautical Society. The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
The Partnership Edge is the new podcast from XTP Media. It is focused on how trust turns ordinary partnering contracts into successful long-term alliances. Each episode features a senior leader on how behaviours within the partnership can reduce risk, increase innovation, and outperform the shared alliance objectives. Search for The Partnership Edge on your preferred podcast platform to hear more on building trusted partnerships.
G'day, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran from Plane Crazy Down Under.
And you're listening to Extended.
I come back to this technical aspect of the book. This is the thing that makes it really special, the detail. And I think for anyone interested, you know, av geeks, bomber force individuals, they'll get so much more out of this than just the story and the plot line, which we don't want to go into too much. But I think is a key aspect of why I felt engaged. I thought, I didn't know that. That's interesting. I didn't know that. And normally when I'm reading fiction, I'll assume that's right. But because I know the detail you went into researching this book, I actually took all of it as just bona fide. I just didn't know that. And you made the Vulcan really real. And I'm really intrigued now to sort of understand how you did that in your writing. How were you inspired to do that? Have you flown in a Vulcan? Did you have to study lots of videos? How did you come about making that machine come alive to be in the real passion that people who are interested in Cold War aircraft feel when they see something like that? Was there an inspiration there? Was there a crew? Was there something that really got you fired up?
It was, I mean, as I mentioned before, we lived just down the road from Wellesbourne. So back at the time when I was starting to write, 655 was still doing taxi runs. And, we would often go and watch her at the Wings and Wheels days, which used to be superb. But also I went in her cockpit and, you know, the Vulcan smell. And I know I sort of talk about that in the book, and it's one of those things you kind of, you have to experience it. And it's, I wish they could bottle it, to be honest. Never mind a floral Yankee candle. I'd have my house smelling of a Vulcan cockpit. but that was, so that was one of the aircraft in my mind. And also reading books. Some of your listeners will probably have heard of Tony Blackman, who wrote a lot of fabulous books. Lovely gentleman.
Yeah.
I had the privilege of meeting him a couple of times, and he was a really lovely gentleman. And sort of reading his books, like Vulcan Test Pilot as well.
Yeah.
That book's fabulous.
It's up there somewhere. It's up there somewhere.
It is a good one.
Yeah.
And I was also very lucky that one of my fellow Resolute authors, her father, flew Vulcans during the Cold War. So I was very fortunate to be able to ask him through her if he'd mind sanity checking and sort of pulling me up if there were any errors and everything. So it was...
But you go... you go, I think you're undermining the impact of the feeling that comes through the book. I suppose what I'm trying to find out is how much research did you put into this? Because you never flew a Vulcan, you never piloted a Vulcan, you never engineered a Vulcan, but the book feels very real, as if the author has, you know, if those experiences and those characters are very, very real. How did you get that? I'm really intrigued in that sort of research that you had to do to get the book to be that credible.
Absorbing lots of written accounts. Again, a Tony Blackman book of Vulcan Boys was, again, another book that I just absolutely soaked up. And actually just spending time looking at the aircraft, you know, sort of, we visited Newark Air Museum as well. Had a look in XM594. And I think it was just using what I'd written to put myself in the pilot seat and try to translate what I was reading into a, if I was in those shoes, and how would I feel? And then to try and bring that along. And I think I also have a degree of mechanical sympathy. It's like if you know, it always makes me wince if someone's like parking and they don't well, you don't get that so much these days with electronic park brakes. But you know, if they yank the handbrake up without pushing the button, and you're like, and it really makes me wince.
Right.
That was part of it. Just that mechanical sympathy. As well.
Yeah. And how much did you have to do to understand the systems and the technology in the Vulcan? Because again, as somebody just interested in aviation, of course, I just see the airframe and I can read about what its capabilities are. But some of that engineering detail that you had to put into the book, how did you go about that technical aspect of learning about the systems and technology in the aircraft?
So again, lots of books. There's my husband also found me lots of you can get like the pilot's notes and engineer's notes and, you know, various notes and things online that actually go through the systems, how they work, you know, things that ground crews and pilots would have had at the time. I also went to the National Archives because there are, you know, it's, I mean, honestly, my idea of a good day out would be the National Archives. It's just, you can, you know, request files on, you know, the development, air crashes, you know, it's all sorts of things that you can request the details on, even memo between government departments discussing projects, and which can sound quite dry, but it really puts you in the place.
Yeah. I think the thing that also comes through is you feel like you're in that time. You know, the things you talk about, you write about in the book, make you feel like you're part of that Cold War time. Now, I am old enough to remember some of that, so it does take one back a little bit. But I think the real thing that comes through is the different threads in the story. You know, the aircraft flight test program, the, without letting any secrets, the spying element. Were you consciously writing an aviation engineering thriller, or was it a Cold War thriller?
I think the engineering fell out of the plot that I wanted to write naturally. It was very much Cold War, and one of the, I'm not sure I would say inspirations, but one of the spy cases that was in the back of my mind was the Portland spy ring. You may have heard that was just
not a million miles away from me down here in Dorset.
You know, so that was, you know, the concerted effort by the Russians to get their hands on top secret technology and you know, the effort that they went to and the importance of the technology. And it also struck me that a lot of people think that espionage is just get the physical bit, you know, steal the physical bit. But actually, the how behind the technology is just as critical. You know, it's like the processes that someone will follow. If it's, oh, I'm trying to think of how to phrase.
No, I can understand. I can understand. I think where you're coming from, but that whole ethos of espionage. How did you sort of tackle that? Because researching the technical aspects of the aircraft, the technology, I can understand that. How did you go about that whole espionage and spy element?
One of the books that actually sparked that part of the plot was The Matrokin Archives, which does get mentioned in Banshee, which is, for any listeners who haven't heard of it, Vasily Matrokin was a Russian defector, and he came to the UK in the early 90s with basically copies of notes of all kinds of KGB files on various missions and activities that the KGB were undertaking in Europe. And there was so much in there about, it wasn't just, you know, hanging around outside air bases trying to take pictures of planes. It was far more detailed, far more trying to get people into positions of vulnerability where then you have a lever to control them, which then leads into the whole psychology aspect. What makes someone do it? Are they coerced? Are they willing? And the Matrokin Archives is a genuinely fascinating book, and I think it still has quite a bit of relevance today, with particularly when you consider what is going on with Russia and Ukraine. And if you haven't read it, I would definitely recommend.
Well, we'll put a link in the show notes to it.
Yeah, it's probably not a quick bedtime read, but it's
okay.
certainly worth wrestling with.
Yeah.
And that was part of it, because it was really eye-opening, because I think for a lot of people, the perception of espionage, it's James Bond. It's quite glamorous and this and that, and the reality is not. and that was part of where that fed in.
Okay. So you've got these various strings running through the book. Again, I wouldn't know, but did you have those sort of laid out in advance before you started writing, or were they things that you continually weaved in as you went along? I'm quite intrigued by that process.
My writing process is best described as chaos. What happened was I had my initial setup in the present. I knew what the project roughly was. I figured out how I wanted it to end. I call those my hard points. They are the things that have to happen in order for the story to happen, to flow. Yeah. And then when you actually look at how a novel, how a story works, it's like, okay, well, you need to have these aspects in a particular order and in particular places to, sort of, basically, if all the action happens too early, then people lose interest, but you don't want to leave it all to the end because then people get bored, kind of thing.
Yeah. Where did you learn this, Lindsay? I'm fascinated, because separately I am doing my own thing, and I'm just fascinated in how you understand the psychology of a reader there. That's really interesting.
There is a lot of stuff online in various places about. There's a book called Save the Cat, which is quite a famous one about story structure and there's all sorts of things about, you know, the three-act structure. The hero's journey is another one about what your protagonists, your main characters should go through during the course of the book. There's lots out there. But ultimately, how I got to where I was with Banshee was I read a lot of books because I think reading and enjoying books of all sorts, you know, fiction, non-fiction, in the genre you write in any genre, and it's a genre you enjoy.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely passionate about it.
But you know, the more you read, the more you get a feel for what works in your own writing. Even if it's just that suspicion in the back of your mind, it's like, not sure that's in the right place there, and you know, I'm not sure this scene does what I need it to. That's kind of where it comes from.
But
in terms of, yeah, I had my hard points for, you know, this is where I start, these are the major events, this is how it's ending. The rest of it I kind of just found out as I went along, and there are sort of two main schools of writing. There are plotters who will plan out every chapter, some in detail, some just as a note before they write. And then there are the pantsers who basically write by the seat of their pants.
Right, okay.
So you sit down writing a scene and you've not really any idea where it's going to go.
Right.
And I'm more on the pantser end of the spectrum.
Okay. It's just fascinating because it just doesn't feel like that. It feels very, very structured and a journey that one goes along as a reader. And particularly because it's aviation themed, you've got that intrigue of the detail, as I mentioned earlier, about the aircraft and that sort of thing. So that's what captured me when I was running through the book. But Banshee's a brilliant title. Where did that come from?
For ages, it was a working title. I was trying to cast around for a word that's of short, snappy. And it comes from a scene in the book when they activate the system and it creates a bit of feedback. And someone refers to it as a banshee's wail. And that was what stuck. And then it's sort of like, well, actually, that could be what they call it. That was as simple as that.
Okay. All right. So I know how I'd sum the book up. As the author and having gone through the whole journey, through the launch, had some feedback, how would you sum up the book in a few easy sentences?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Without reading the back cover.
I think one of the themes that I don't know how well it comes across, but as I was writing, I was very much thinking of how the past still affects the present. That people are still people. People haven't changed fundamentally in thousands of years, and that the problems that Gordon comes up against, and that's it's. You could imagine that today, perhaps different circumstances than that. I think I would sum it up as it's not so much about the aircraft, but also about the people's interaction with it. And you know, the politics and the espionage is kind of part of the backdrop for people making lots of different choices that have consequences that they don't always foresee.
Yeah, very relevant. Very relevant, I suppose, in today's world as much as any. So that's Banshee. It's now out in both hardback and paperback.
Paperback and ebook.
Yeah, paperback and ebook. Okay, so I can't believe that Lindsay isn't working on something else. What's in the offering stable at the moment?
There are a couple of things. One is all of the Resolute books are bringing out a Christmas-themed anthology of short stories. So that's coming out later this year. Although I do have to warn people, it doesn't actually have any aviation content in. I've let people down by not writing any aviation stories.
Okay. But is there another aviation one in the stable somewhere?
Yes, I am deep researching what is currently just called Book 2. I have a working title for it, but that's probably about to change, which is in a similar vein to Banshee. So it's twin timeline again. Alex, who's the present day investigator, comes back. He has a bit more to deal with this time. But this one is focusing on early Cold War overflights of the Soviet Union, which has been, it's been another research rabbit hole. Been massively fascinating. So this is like the period before the U2 entered service. So I'm looking at the Canberra PR7.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting.
It's I've been doing my best not to fall down the rabbit hole of learning about optics and things like that, because that is not my specialism. I'm far happier with aircraft systems.
Okay.
But it's massively fun. My colleagues have learned not to ask me how Book 2 is going, because
Is there any stake in the ground of roughly where you are, halfway, almost there, first it's draft?
I'm about 2/3 way through. Progress has been slow, so fitting it around family life, day job. But we are looking at releasing a publication probably March, April next year.
Interesting.
If I ask my editor for another extension, I think she might slap me.
Okay.
He's already pushed back twice, so it's...
So sticking to Banshee then, where can we get a copy? Where can we find it online? And more importantly, where can we find you online?
So Banshee is available on paperback and ebook on Amazon. You can read it for free if you have a Kindle Unlimited subscription. You can buy paperbacks from my website, which is lindsayrumbold.com, signed or unsigned, whatever. you can also buy signed paperback copies from the Vulcan to the Sky web shop, and any copies bought from the Vulcan to the Sky web shop will, the profits from that will go to 558. As for me, I'm online on Threads, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Linz_Rumbold.
And we'll put links to all of those shown in the show notes. Lindsay, looking very much forward to the next book. Good luck with that. And thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you for the invite, Peter.
We'd like to thank White Hearts for our music, and I'd like to thank Lindsay for joining us today. Our book, Constant Endeavour, RAF Coastal Command, is available in both audiobook and ebook formats. You can find the audiobook on all major audiobook platforms and the ebook through Amazon. Links are in the show notes. You can also find a copy on our own bookshop, which you can find at bookshop.org. Every penny we raise goes to Help for Heroes. You can find me at NASCAR Hornet on social media, and of course through multiple XTP media platforms, as well as the Partnership Edge podcast. You can find Gareth, Ellie and Tim on both their personal and of course through the extended social feeds. With the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. This is Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. The programme's produced with a Creative Commons licence.
Please leave us a review wherever you play your podcast. It genuinely helps grow our programme and broaden its reach. You can also review the programme and leave us feedback on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us, our email address is getinvolved@aviationextended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of Extended.
Extended.
This is XTP Media.